Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Woods, welcome back to the show, my man. How are you?
I'm doing good. The sun is shining here in Vancouver, so I won't have to worry about hockey in about a week.
Yes, you and all other people in Canada, sadly, will be watching the games, but likely not with the same vigor they would if their city was in it. Now, I know when I spoke to you last, Pete, we talked about the gear, the goaltending equipment. You're like, yeah, okay, it'll be a change, but maybe not as significant. Well, the story recently came out about the second mannequin at the manufacturer looked a lot smaller. And you talked to a goalie coach who's actually seen one of the newer, more slimmed down models, and it's going to be a bigger change than people thought. How come?
Well, I mean, as I said before, I didn't think it was going to make that big a difference, but like you, I read that story in Sports Illustrated by Alex Pruitt, who, you know, has there been a better hire from a hockey writing perspective over the last few years than him at SI and must reading every time? And when he talked about a second mannequin, within days, I'm getting phone calls and emails from guys and coaches that have had a chance to see this stuff at the manufacturing plant. And one guy who had a chance to actually have it on and on the ice, one of the brands, I won't name which one, felt like it was such a different, so much smaller through the arms and shoulders and chest that there was enough coverage compromised. Goaltenders would no longer be able to play on the posts the way they have been learning to do over the past couple of seasons. And this was just one example, one sort of anecdote of something that he felt. And this is a guy who works with pros, works with guys right up to the NHL level, and he felt like reverse VH, which is something you and I have talked about, a way of sealing the post, something that Jonathan Quick kind of made popular in 2012, where that lead leg is down along the ice and the back leg is a kind of horizontal along the goal line and used to push you up against the post. And it's a post-seal technique that this coach didn't feel would be usable anymore. In other words, there are going to be more holes in our coverage as goaltenders to the point where some of these guys are going to have to change the way they play on the post. And you and I have talked about this, Jason. The reason there's so much focus on post work at the NHL level and why it's one of the things that, you know, every goalie coming up to the NHL level has to sort of focus on and improve on is because so much of the attack in the game is from below the goal line, behind the net, jams, wraps, sharp angle stuff out of the corner, and goalies spend a lot of time working on it. Well, you know, the advent of the reverse VH and sort of the perfection of it over the last 3 years has been a major, major boon for goaltending. And if this stuff is as tight as and tight-fitting and as small as the indications are that quote-unquote second mannequin will make it, goalies may have to completely change that tactic around the posts. And that is not going to be an overnight adjustment for a lot of guys. So the irony here, of course, is you're probably just going to create more bad goals from bad angles, but it'll be more goals nonetheless if what I'm hearing proves true.
Well, it's interesting how we determine it a bad goal, right? If it's a great shot where a goalie, because, you know, his equipment isn't cheating and allowing him to cover areas he didn't cover before, well, to me, maybe that's just a purely accurate shot up into a small area.
Well, I mean, we're not necessarily talking about accurate shots because I'm not talking about sealing the height or under the crossbar. I'm just talking about being able to close the gap between the arm and the body. Hmm. And the reason that technique is so hard is because of all the strain it puts on the hips. So if your post is, your skate is up against the post, to lean back your torso and seal it up against the hips creates a lot of torque on the knees and on the ankle, and so not all guys are able to do it. And the thought here is big guys especially, even more so, are not going to be able to get that seal, not going to be able to push as hard against the post. And, you know, maybe the adjustment will be simply putting the pad inside the post and making it easier to kind of seal it up, but it's going to be an adjustment for sure, and probably a sign that, hey, with those holes, blocking goaltending or the amount of situations where you can get away with blocking is going to decrease, which is something that Kay Whitmore has talked about throughout. Other goaltenders have talked about throughout wanting to get rid of. And frankly, when I hear the term blocking goaltender, there aren't that many left in the NHL anyways. Really, I could argue there aren't purely any. You can't survive at the NHL level if you're purely a blocking goaltender. But if you remove the block almost completely and force guys to react, you know, there could be a bigger change than even I anticipated through the first couple of months of these talks, and certainly through the first prototypes that I heard about and was able to get a glimpse of.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Now, Kevin, the one area of equipment that I think most people would agree on that could use maybe, bigger or more enhancement would be the goaltending headgear, because it's not like goalies' heads are stopping a lot of goals by any stretch of the imagination. However, there are, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury is out for the second time this year. Anderson is out. And when you look at the amount of focus it takes to come back from a concussion and how some teams aren't offering proper treatment or similar treatment from one to the next when it comes to goalie concussions, how come?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you fix this one, but we certainly have seen more of them this year. Cam Ward missed time after a shot off the mask. Without having the list in front of me, I want to say about six different guys have missed time with concussion or concussion-type symptoms after shots off the mask. Now, we saw the other night in the American Hockey League, Scott Wedgwood, who went on a great run when the Devils called him up while Schneider was out, cut for several stitches over the eye by a shot off the mask, just open him wide up, just on top of the eyebrow. Now, you know, this is, to me, a function of shots getting harder. There are some cases where goalies will take a little padding out of the mask to try and get their face deeper into it to improve their sight lines. There are some cases where they may cut a corner to try and improve how they're seeing things, and that costs them. But for the most part, for the last couple of years, the NHL has standardized testing on these masks. And you have to, you know, talking about a lot of masks made in somebody's garage anymore, you have to pass pretty strict testing in order to have your mask approved and used in the NHL. So why are we seeing more concussions? Well, for starters, you've got shots that are harder than ever. And I've talked about different anecdotes where pieces of equipment that haven't broken in 12 years on the goaltender are starting to get cracks in them that they've never seen before. There's a change in the level of respect. Frederick Anderson was a teammate shot that got him. I hit him underneath the bottom of the chin, and as he said to me, and as any goalie can attest, you take a shot in the bottom of the mask, right at a kind of underneath that lower seam, and it's just like getting punched in the mouth. It's the same sensation. There's a combination there that I don't know we can fix. You can't, not like you can bubble wrap their heads. Hey, we're trying to make everything else smaller. You don't want to make their heads bigger. The bigger concern for me is, like you said, it takes a long time for a goaltender to come back from this. Ryan Miller, his was from a collision, obviously, with Lucic while he was with the Sabres. But he talked about playing half a season before he was able to actually focus on the puck for an entire game. Now, I would wonder why he was playing at all if he couldn't focus on the puck for an entire game. But we've talked to other goaltenders. James Reimer in 2013 with the Toronto Maple Leafs came back and played, felt off, wasn't 100% there, didn't realize how bad it was until he got treatment privately in the summer and the lights turned back on. That's when he realized just how far off he was while trying to play the game and admitted it's no way to play the game as a goaltender. The puck, too many things are moving that you're trying to keep track of to have any problems in terms of whether it's neck tension, dizziness, or an inability to kind of focus to really be effective as an NHL goaltender. As far as why more teams don't offer that treatment or don't refer those guys to some of the sacrocranial treatment that's out there, you know, I think there are questions still in the mainstream science community about the validity of these practices. All I can tell you is anecdotally, you know, 30, 40 NHLers who see a couple of guys that I know locally, it's like night and day in terms of the way it can kind of remove some of that pressure that these guys feel behind the eyes and in their heads after taking impact, and help them kind of get back to feeling normal. Remove that sort of foggy windshield that it often feels like, at least for me personally, you've had in front of you after taking an impact. Some of these guys chase down this type of help privately, but not all of them. And with a couple of these teams heading into the playoffs with question marks about goaltenders coming off concussions, you kind of hope that more of them will be looking for those type of treatment options. Unfortunately, I still hear far too many cases where it's wait in the dark until the symptoms go away.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine joined us. Kevin, I had a few scouts tell me last week the most overrated player now in the hockey world is the NCAA free agent, that people think they're going to come in and be great because they're older than draft picks. You know, Montreal signs Lindgren and they weigh Ben Scrivens because they guaranteed the kid would get a start this week. There's also the guy, Alex Lynn, Lyon, who's out there. How different are CIS goalies to NCAA goalies? Like, if teams are looking so much at NCAA goalies, should they start looking at CIS goalies the same?
Yeah, and this is a question I'm trying to get an answer to, because I don't think any of them are right now. But when you talk to the goalie development coaches that are searching out these NCAA kids, and by the way, there are some that agree with your scout wholeheartedly. They think that a lot of these kids that teams are rushing, lining up to sign. And like you said, in Lindgren's case, it is my understanding that he will actually, not only are they have him up with the team for the year to burn the first year of his contract, he will actually get a start this week in Montreal, less than a couple weeks after his NCAA season ended. Now, a couple of the guys I talked to don't think these kids are that good, but at the end of the day, teams chase them because they're more mature. We talk about goaltending taking longer. These kids have been in the system for 3-4 more years, 5 more years in some cases than if you had picked them as 18-year-olds. They've had longer to mature off the ice. They've had a chance for the game to mature on the ice. More pro-level, pro-style coaching in the NCAA for goaltenders. Still not full-time goalie coach positions available, but more teams paying their goalie coach to be a full assistant coach. So you're seeing that trend. You're seeing teams race to that. And if those are the reasons, if we're talking about time to marinate, then why not look at some of the CIS goaltenders? Because a lot of these guys were kind of, like, if you take a look at some of the past of some of these guys that come out of the CHL and are allowed to then go to the CIS, whereas the NCAA doesn't allow that. If you play in the CHL, your NCAA career is over. But you can still play CIS. There are some guys who are pretty highly touted, maybe not all drafted, a lot of them just missed on the draft, but much like NCAA goaltenders, who go on to play CIS and have that same 3-4 years, sometimes 5, to continue to mature on and off the ice as goaltenders. And some of the goaltending coaching is at a pretty good level. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that happen in the next little while, Jason, if we see teams start to maybe look up north and see if they can't find one or two of these guys. Because I talk to goalie coaches who think there's a few in the CIS that are every bit as good as these kids in the NCAA that are getting lineups to sign contracts.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder at times where it's a lot of follow the leader still, and you know, they're totally discounting CIS hockey players. Because I'm with you where, you know, the guys who will play a year in the dub at a young age and then suddenly, you know, they can't go NCAA, and so they play in the dub for a long time. I don't think they're any less developed than some of the kids we see coming out of NCAA. And you know what? We've seen a lot of forwards, defensemen, and goaltenders, and probably because they just get overhyped. And I think that's probably the bigger word, is a team start thinking, wow, we got to really race to get these guys. And in most cases, they're no better than players in CIS.
Well, yeah, and the one thing with NCAA is, more coaches I talk to, it is a shot first league, and the quality of chances from a goaltending perspective are not up there with pro. And that, so there's an adjustment period coming out of the NCAA because of that. Most goalies have to change their depth. They're so aggressive, not all, but most, at the NCAA level. They have to rein that in before they turn pro. And frankly, from what I've seen of CIS, there are more pro-level games being played in terms of style of play as it pertains to the goaltender at the CIS level than there are at the NCAA level.
One final one for you. Jake Allen, he's officially done for the year in St. Louis, so it looks like this will be Brian Elliott's team to win, unless Anders Nilsson will make a postseason appearance.
Hey, it's the St. Louis Blues and Ken Hitchcock, so nothing is out of the question at this point, Jason. But no, jokes aside, I think they were leaning this way anyways. I think that Marty Brodeur, in the organization as a voice, has maybe calmed some of that itchy trigger finger that Ken Hitchcock seems to have with goaltenders, and even the organization seems to have with Brian Elliott in particular. He's been so good, whether you look at the basic stats or the advanced stats, or just watch him play and some of the high-quality chances that they've given up and the way he's playing. Elliott has been so good since kind of the turn of the calendar into 2016, that this has to be the year. I've been calling for it for a couple of years, and they always seem to do something, whether it's bringing Ryan Miller or when Jake Allen got hot right at the end of last year, changed their minds. They always seem to undermine Elliott. This is the time. They need to find out what they have here and whether what they're seeing in the regular season, and it's been a consistent evolution for him. Is he now ready to have that transfer over into the playoffs? Because he's only really had one shot where he was healthy at going on a playoff run, and I would argue this has got to be the year they give him a second look.
Kev, always good to catch up with you, man. It'll be interesting next week. We'll be talking about playoff matchups as we will know which 16 teams are in and who's playing who. It should be fun.
Yeah, it should be. I'm looking forward to it.